Hey, Rich, when you think of Proverbs, what's the first word that pops into your mind? Wisdom or knowledge. And so then when you think of wisdom, Kevin, our working definition for the wisdom for this class is? The ability to see the end of a thing. And we've talked about how light and darkness are going to play into that picture, and that is going to come to light, pun intended, later on in this class. And so we will go through that. But we left off at the beginning of Proverbs chapter 4 last time. And Proverbs chapter 4 has three different sections. And this first section is going to deal with Solomon talking to his children about the instruction that he received from their grandfather, his father. And automatically, when we know our biblical history, when we're talking about Solomon, who would have been Solomon's father that he's talking about receiving this instruction from? Yeah, King David. And his mother would have been Bathsheba. That's correct. And so this is how Solomon is going to begin chapter 4. And he says, "Hear, O sons, a father's instruction." Now, when he says this, he's prepping them not to only tell them, "Listen to what I, as your father, am telling you." But what he's about to say is listen to a father's instruction, not just coming from me, but what I'm about to tell you came from my father before me. And he says, "And be attentive that you may gain insight. For I give you good precepts. Do not forsake my teaching. When I was a son with my father, tender only in the sight of my mother, he taught me and said to me," and this is where we left off last time, and that's where we discussed. Now, what's really interesting is when we are going to break down what Solomon says here about what David had passed on to him, it's going to be very similar to the words that we see David passing on to Solomon on his deathbed. And so there we turn to 1 Kings chapter 2. And again, there's a lot of history behind what happens right here. We don't have time to go into 1 Kings chapter 1. To talk about that, but King David calls Solomon to him, and I want you guys to notice if you see any prevalent themes that David is going to talk about here that you see throughout the Psalms and throughout the Proverbs. Don and I were just talking about that, how you see it mimic over and over again and repeat itself. So what can you pick out here? David's time to die draws near, and he commanded Solomon, his son, saying, "I am about to go the way of all the earth. Be strong and show yourself a man, and keep charge of the Lord your God, walking in his ways and keeping his statutes, his commandments, his rules, and his testimonies, as is written in the law of Moses, that you may prosper in all that you do and wherever you turn, and that the Lord may establish his word that he spoke concerning me, saying, if your sons pay close attention to their way, to walk before me in faithfulness with all of their heart and all their soul, you shall not lack a man on the throne of Israel." That was the promise from the Lord to David. Now, when you look at what David says here, what theme or prevalent themes jump out at you that we've read about wisdom over and over and over again as Solomon has written already in the first three chapters? What jumps out at you? Yeah, Joyce. Okay, first of all, you need to listen. How often does every section starts with, "Hear my sons, listen to what I am saying." Okay, so the plea to listen. Yeah, Nancy.
Walk in my ways and you will prosper.
That's it. The correlation between what David says here and what is promised from Solomon about wisdom over and over again is, if you listen to the fools and you follow their path, it's only going to lead to what? Destruction. And they're going to bring their blood upon their own head. But if you listen to wisdom, it's going to grant you life and prosperity and all of these different things, sometimes a physical nature, but always a spiritual nature. Yeah, Bruce.
And if you look back at the history of all the leaders up till then, usually the most religious leader, their children fell away. So the
And that's a concern that happens even within the church. You see it happen all the time where preachers or elders will have eventually their children fall away. And there's some reasons for that. A lot of times due to neglect. And we're going to talk about that in just a moment. Yeah.
But we need to dinosaur, though, this is not teaching a health and wealth of God.
No, that's correct.
This is generalities that if you follow God, mm-hmm. generally things will be well with you. We see, you know, like take Job mm-hmm. or any others that we read about mm-hmm. that suffered horrendous diseases. Mm-hmm.
To this exception, within this context, did the Lord physically promise that there would physically be one to reign on the throne so long as they kept the Lord's commandments? And Israel was, yes. And the reason that didn't happen is because, as we all know, they fell away into idolatry. And they rejected their father's teaching. They rejected the Lord. So we're reminded of this passage. Now going into what, these are the words of David right here. Solomon says, this is what my father taught and instructed me. So we're no longer listening to Solomon. We are now listening to King David. And again, you're going to see the Psalms prevalent throughout these things. So he starts off saying, let your heart hold fast to my words. Keep my commandments and live. Get wisdom. Get insight. Do not forget and do not turn away from the words of my mouth. Do not forsake her, and she will keep you. Love her, and she will guard you. The beginning of wisdom is this. Get wisdom. And whatever you get insight. Prize her highly, and she will exalt you. She will honor you if you embrace her. She will place on your head a graceful garland, and she will bestow on you a beautiful crown. So let's just start here. Verse 4, it says, let your heart keep my words and keep my commandments and live. And who was it that said, listen? Joyce, was that you, the theme of listening? Notice every time Solomon starts a new section, he starts it off, hear my sons, listen and you will live. Well, where did he get that from? Directly from his father. That is how his father started his conversations with his son. Let your words hold fast, or let your heart hold fast my words, keep my commandments and live. And so the lesson here, which is amazing, it's nothing new under the sun, is do children have a difficult time listening to what their parents have to say? The cams are nodding yes very fast. You know, they've got 3 2-year-olds. And, you know, this is the general theme of life where children want to fight for their independence, but a lot of times they want to act in rebellion. They think that they know everything, been there, done that, and that their parents are so foolish or their parents are so ignorant. And how many lessons would have not have to have been learned the hard way if children would have just listened to their parents in the first place and what they had to say, and listened to wisdom in the first place and what they had to say? Joyce, you're doing this. We're going to get there in just a second. Hold on to that thought. I want you to talk about it in just a minute. Yeah, John.
When you think about it, when you talk about a child when you're 6 years old, it's a healthy thing that they go through that. But when you get 16, you've got a problem. Mm-hmm. Then you maybe want to look at yourself and think about what you're doing.
Okay, good. And I'm telling y'all, if you want to learn how to parent, and this is where I'm going to go as if the Lord blesses us with children, this is where you want to start, is by looking at the Word, especially in Proverbs. And here in verse 5, you're going to see the same basic thing. Get wisdom, get insight, do not forget, do not turn away from the words of my mouth. And we talked about this, Solomon has already mentioned this aspect, and he got it from his father, this idea of don't forget. Now, when he says that, how does he mean that? Because it's not like, you know, if a child disobeys their parents, what are the odds that they completely forgot about all the rules? You know, it just vanquished out of their brain. They had no idea whatsoever that this was a rule. What does Solomon mean when he says, don't forget my words? What does David mean to Solomon when he says, don't forget my teachings?
He's talking specifically about obeying God.
Okay.
You know, he's saying, don't forget to follow God. Don't forget to cleave to his commandments. Don't forget to, you know, follow the words of Moses in the law. You know, don't forget.
Okay.
You know,
Okay, good. Brad, and then we'll move forward.
This forgetting is more like an ignoring.
Okay, good, good.
It's not that someone's going to one day, oh yeah, I forgot that.
Yeah.
No, it's, I'm going to choose to ignore that. When the longer you ignore something, the less it is in your
okay. Good. It's like the phrase that my father always told me, remember who you are. It's not because I would have forgotten who I was. What that plea is telling someone is act accordingly to what you know you are supposed to be and who you have been made into being. Yeah, Phoebe and then Lonnie.
Well, it's writing the words on your heart so you won't forget.
All right, and notice that's what he said earlier. Let your heart hold fast to my words. We're going to get there in just a minute. Lonnie and then Bruce. That's right. That's right. That's right. Good. Bruce.
What is, it says get wisdom, get insight. What does wisdom and insight, what are they referring to?
Okay. I think wisdom is referring absolutely to what it means, is wisdom. Because this whole principle of obtaining wisdom, and that's going to start with the fear of the Lord. And all of this wisdom that Solomon has been talking about, that if you attain wisdom, she's going to have life and prosperity, and that's all talking about the fear of the Lord. And so when he says to get wisdom, get insight, remember chapter 1, the middle of chapter 1, said wisdom cries out from the city gates and is calling out to you. And so what David's plea with Solomon here is you acquire wisdom. You do anything you can to get wisdom. And that's going to be seen at the end of the chapter as well. Yeah, Matt?
The word's also translated in other places as skill.
Okay.
So it kind of gives you an idea of what they're talking about with wisdom.
Okay.
You're not going to be able to learn to do trades and things if you don't practice it and have skill at it.
Okay.
So this, it's probably more pertaining to life here than talking about a
okay. Okay, good. Brad, and then Brian.
As the dual image versus the dual application oftentimes happen in the Psalms and Proverbs, get wisdom, get insight, and then do not forget, do not turn away. They're really referring to the same thing.
Good.
Get wisdom, get insight. How do you get wisdom, get insight? By not ignoring, by not turning away, by not forgetting what you've been taught. That's how you're going to get it.
Good. Good.
God knows we're very forgetful people. And, if you ever wonder why we have the Lord's Supper every Lord's Day, so we don't forget.
Mm-hmm.
I remember Peter in 2 Peter chapter 1 talks about the fact that as long as he was in the tent, he was going to continue to stir them up to remind them mm-hmm. of the things the Lord had said. So mm-hmm. we need to be gently reminded mm-hmm. over and over.
Good. Good. All right, so we're going to come back to this idea of embracing wisdom, because it's going to be found again in verse 8 and towards the end of the chapter. But I want to focus on this for a moment. Notice the lesson that Solomon is teaching to his children here is, this is what I was taught from my father, and now me as your father, this is what I am teaching you. And if we go back to what David said in 2 Kings, Solomon is hoping to instill in his children that one day they are also going to do what? Teach their children what they learned from their father. You go back to Deuteronomy 6, after the greatest command, to love the Lord your God with all your heart, all your soul, all your mind, starting in verse 5, and it would say, and you will teach these things to your children. When you lie down, when you walk, when you get up. The point was, no matter where you are, you have a responsibility to teach your children. Children have the responsibility to listen to their parents, but it's difficult to listen when there's nothing to listen to. Did you hear me on that? It's difficult to listen if there's nothing to listen to. Yeah, Hewlin.
Okay,
good.
By example also.
Okay, good.
Walk with their children.
All right, so you lead by example. You teach them just in conversations. I remember my dad and I would take trips up to Gaffin Road to the dump, and the whole time we'd be talking about something spiritual and come back, or at night when he's reading his Bible on the bed. But other times we would actually open up the Bible together, and there would be teaching that was taking place. And I want to tell you a story. This is a sad one, but to illustrate, unfortunately, what happens so often, even within the church, is we were in Santa Clara, and there was a lady, and unfortunately, and you can understand why, this family has since renounced their faith in God. But there was assignments given to the kids in Bible class, homework, and told them to go through it and have their parents check over their homework and bring it back the next week. Well, this child's mother and father came up to the elders and demanded a meeting afterwards and said, "We both are working and we're both busy. How dare you give our child homework and assign us the task of going over this Bible homework with them at home? This is not our job. This is the teacher's job." That was literally the conversation that took place. How do you think that conversation went? Because, I just got to say this again, it is not the church's job to teach your children, okay? We do teaching here, and we will continue to do teaching here, but the responsibility first and foremost lies on what two individuals? The father and the mother. And you have better in your life have time set aside as parents to teach your children in your home. Yeah, Rochelle. Good. It's just to reinforce what they're already getting at home. Good. Joyce. Yeah, good. Blake.
So I agree, number one, that you know, that's a parent's responsibility. But I nearly, and I know exactly what you're talking about, but I nearly think that as a congregation, you ought to say that, you know what? It's our job to teach the children.
Okay, good.
And if we don't do this, well, they're not going to get anywhere else. And, you know, because that keeps you with the understanding that it's a parent's responsibility. And the parents ought to say, it's our job. We're not going to rely on the congregation. And really, you know, if you're ever at a bad congregation, well, hopefully the parents are filling in all the gaps. And if you ever have bad parents, well, hopefully the congregation's filling
okay.
all the gaps.
Okay, good.
But if everybody's saying, you know what, I'm going to pretend like they're not going to get this at home, well, then we're going to do a better job here.
All right.
And if parents are saying, I'm not going to assume that they're going to get this in Bible class, well, then they'll do a better job.
All right, I appreciate that so much, and let me explain why. My dad recently quoted to me, and he says it takes a village to raise, you know, a family. And the principle I was trying to establish to begin with, not to negate that, is that we have to understand the responsibility first and foremost lies on the parents. But that does not mean you go the other extreme and say, well, we're not going to teach as the church. And I appreciate the way that you put that, Blake. What if we as adults and as brethren in Christ treated each other in a such a way that we acted as though they weren't getting that anywhere else in their life? How much more would we move towards helping to stimulate one another to love and good works? Because it's not just the responsibility of the parents. It is primarily, but do we have a responsibility to stimulate one another to love and good works? Yes, so when I correct myself, I said something incorrect. When I said it's not the church's responsibility, that was incorrect. It is not the church's responsibility first. It is not the church's responsibility primarily. So I apologize for the way I put that. I was trying to make a different point. Yeah, Phoebe.
Well, one time there was a situation where a village
And so other parents didn't really want their children to be around this child because of their language. Instead of trying to say, well, in our house, this is, we don't talk that way, or to teach that child. And I think that's sad when that happens.
Ostracized instead.
Because the child doesn't know any different.
Good. John, you had your hand up earlier.
I was just thinking, added to what Blake was saying, Neil and I have talked about this casually, and Neil shared with me the fact that some congregations he's run into that have decided it's not correct to have Bible schools in the back and teach young people. Yet we find that an agreement that it's basically the responsibility of the elders to teach, to feed.
That's right.
And whether you're children or whether you're parents or whether you're sons or daughters, cannot ignore the responsibility to do that. So if it crosses over, it crosses over.
Good.
If it's gravy on top, it's gravy on top. But if it's, the meat hasn't been given, then as Joyce said, maybe
Rochelle, yeah.
Or that was Rochelle.
Yeah, Rochelle.
Maybe we offer them the meat and potatoes too.
Good. Okay. Awesome.
I can see a blending of the two is very rich.
Good. Okay. So, man, Jack, I'm sorry. You might be right. Verse 6, do not forsake her and she will keep you. Love her and she will guard you. Who knows about the theory of reciprocity? That's a big word. Here's the theory of reciprocity. Ready? What did you just do? When I smiled at you, what did you do?
Oh, smile back.
Okay, good. When I watch this. Hey, Helen. Okay, that's the theory of reciprocity right there. When you do something, it's going to happen to you in return. And that's a basic communication thing. You smile at someone, they're more apt to smile back. You wave at someone, they're more apt to wave back, generally. This is the theory of reciprocity. And it's going to be found here within wisdom. If you love wisdom, then guess what? Wisdom is going to love you. If you do not forsake wisdom, then wisdom is not going to forsake you. She's going to guard you. This is the promise and the motivation behind listening to a father's imploration to accept wisdom. And it's there just verbatim from the text. If you don't forsake, she won't forsake. That's the idea of guarding. If you love, she will love. That's the idea of watching over. Proverbs 8, verse 17 literally says, I love those who love me, and those who seek me diligently will find me. And so there's that theory again, is I love those who love me. And it's the idea of if you cherish wisdom and you hold on to wisdom, then wisdom is always going to protect and is always going to guard. Never is wisdom going to steer you down the wrong path. Especially when we understand wisdom, how we have from the book of Proverbs. What is the beginning of wisdom? The fear of the Lord. And so therefore, that is why wisdom, true godly wisdom, will never steer you down the wrong path. Now, verse 7 can be confusing because we understand that the fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. And in chapter 9, verse 10, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. But here, David said this to Solomon. The beginning of wisdom is this. Get wisdom. Now, how many of you, does that leave your head kind of scratching? Like, well, duh. of course, to the beginning of something is to get it in the first place. And so I wrestled with this for a while. Let me give you my thoughts on this. When it says, the beginning of wisdom is this, get wisdom, and whatever you get insight. Does anyone have the King James or New King James, what it reads there instead? What does it say? Okay, go ahead and read verse 7 there. Right. Wisdom is the principal thing. And because of that, get wisdom. Let's go back in our mentality to what Jesus says about the kingdom of heaven in Matthew chapter 13. The kingdom of heaven is like a great treasure within a field. And when someone found it, what did they do? They sold everything in order to obtain that field because they understood the value and what it was. This is what David is trying to tell Solomon. This is the beginning of wisdom. It is to have the absolute desire that no matter what you do, you will do anything that you can to obtain it. And the context is going to support that interpretation. When you look at verses 8, prize her highly. And again, here's that reciprocal relationship. When you do so, she will exalt you. Honor her. She will honor you if you embrace her. She will place on your head a graceful garland, and she will bestow on you a beautiful crown. It's this idea of you're going to get out of something that which you put into it. The more you search for wisdom and the harder you try to achieve it and receive it and apply it into your lives, the more it's going to work within your lives. And that's why James tells us, if anyone is lacking wisdom, what should you do? You ask for it. You seek for it. And the promise is you are going to find it. You are going to get it within your life. I saw a hand up. Yeah, Joyce. That's that's like saying I don't want to pray for patience because then God will give me triplets or something, right? So I don't want to pray for wisdom because then things will get hard. You know, I don't have much to say to that other than if that's the attitude of someone, they don't understand what Christ has called us to. Because to follow Jesus is not easy. To follow Jesus is to pick up your cross and deny yourself and follow him. And wisdom is, it promises life eternally. It promises, blessings that come with it. But with wisdom is going to come challenges, because those who are righteous are oftentimes going to be tested. They're going to be persecuted. And so I would just argue that someone who says, I don't want to pray for wisdom because things will get hard, one, you're never going to grow. Because when you're comfortable, you're never growing. And when you're growing, you're never comfortable. But that would just be my first initial response. Roy?
If they got wisdom, they might have to change their ways.
Yeah, well, that's true. Yeah, Joyce.
If we go through trials and overcome it, then we've got wisdom.
Got it.
So maybe they were thinking that way.
Yeah, maybe. And that's that might be natural. As people, we discipline in and of itself, or trials are never fun at the moment, but the Hebrew writer says that it bears a fruit of righteousness, and so that's why we endure it, that's why we go through. Yeah, Phoebe and then Matt.
I think that you learn wisdom as you're going through. I don't think it just comes out.
Like all of a sudden you wake up. Yeah. Okay. Okay. Yeah, Matt.
I think what he's really trying to say here is the word beginning was also translated as first or foremost. But the great thing about wisdom is as soon as you begin down this path, it begins its reward. How many things in life do we go through year after year, or week, months, and we have to go on and on before we receive the reward?
Good. Okay. And it's what a parallel contrast between sin, which promises pleasure now, but doesn't sustain, and yet wisdom, which promises that much more to come, really, and really fills our heart the way it ought to. Moving on, because I got 15 minutes. I might be able to do it. So verse 10, hear my son, and this is going to be the second section, 10 through 19, talking about avoiding the wrong path. And so now we're back on Solomon, not David. And he says, hear my son, accept my words, that years of your life may be many. Again, the same lesson that's taught over and over again, the same introduction from Solomon. Verse 11, I've taught you the way of wisdom. I have led you in the paths of uprightness. When you walk, your step will not be hampered, and if you run, you will not stumble. We saw that verbatim already in chapter 3, verses 21 through 23. And the reason for that is if wisdom is light, here's our picture again, if it's completely pitch black, no wisdom, no fear of the Lord, then I'm not going to be able to see the end of a thing, and I'm going to stumble on that which lies in front of me because I don't have the light to expose it. I can't see it. But if wisdom is the light of the Lord, and the fear of the Lord is the wisdom and the light of God, then it illuminates my path before me, and I'm not going to stumble, because if I adhere to the Lord, I'm going to know that which I road I should take, that which the Lord has commanded and that which I see the world doing. And light illuminates everything around you to where you see, I don't want to go down that road. Wisdom sees the end of a thing. That only leads to destruction. That's only going to cause me to stumble. I'm going to follow the light of the Lord. And so continuing on, verse 14, do not enter the path of the wicked, and do not walk in the way of evil. Avoid it, do not go on it, turn away from it, and pass on. Notice how similar this is to both Proverbs chapter 2 and also David's words in Psalm chapter 1. Proverbs 2, to deliver you from the way of evil, from men of perverted speech who forsake the paths of uprightness and walk in ways of darkness, who rejoice in doing evil and delight in the perverseness of evil, men whose paths are crooked and are devious in all of their ways. And that's describing someone who not only is walking in darkness and does not know it, this is describing someone who is walking in darkness and understands what they're doing. That's the path that they want to travel down. And yet, David warns of this, just like Solomon is in Psalm chapter 1. Blessed is the man who does not, notice the progression, walk in the counsel of the wicked, nor stands in the way of sinners, nor sits in the seat of scoffers. But instead of his delight being in the perverseness of evil, where is his delight found in? It's in the law of the Lord, and that is light. And it goes back to what Jesus said, and everyone is in one of these two categories. Everyone is. You cannot love and serve two masters. You will either hate one and love the other, or you will serve one and despise the other. And in the context, Jesus was talking about God and the love of money, but this can be brought back to the idea of light and darkness. Imagine this illustration for a moment. Have you ever seen light and darkness cover the same spot? I mean, that's just like, it doesn't work. You either have darkness, or as soon as light touches it, what happens to that darkness? It's gone. You cannot have both present at the same time. And so here Solomon, I know Kevin's going to come up with some crazy. It's just the absence of light. Good. And so when you look at this, what Solomon is pleading is you do not want to walk down this path of darkness. This is the direction that it will lead you. This is the way that it is going to go, and you need to avoid it. Jack and I were talking about an illustration today, and I want to bring it up. Have you ever got a restraining order against somebody? Has anyone in here ever had, or maybe a restraining order against you? You know, I was like, yeah, no. You know, in that case, if you had a restraining order against somebody, would you ever meet up for lunch? Or would you be okay with them moving right next door to where you live or just outside as close as they can get their jurisdiction? You know, no, those are put into place because for a legitimate reason, the government recognizes you need to avoid somebody. It means you stay as far away from them as you possibly can. So put this into the perspective of what Solomon is saying here. When you avoid darkness and you avoid the path of wickedness, how many times do Christians try to flirt with sin and see how close they can get to sin without actually sinning? Or as close as they can get to looking like the world without actually being like the world? We don't understand just light and darkness if that's the case. We don't understand what God has called us to be. Because here Solomon says, you have a restraining order against darkness. You avoid it. You stay as far away from it as possible. Because when you start to flirt with sin, guess what's going to happen in your life? You're going to fall. The more you allow light to be shaded, pretty soon you're going to end up in darkness. And so just let that illustration permeate in your mind. When we talk about sin and the ways of the world in darkness, it's not that I'm going to get as close to it, but I'm still called out. I want to be as different as I can be, so to speak. I don't want to look like the world. I don't want to look like Satan. I'm going to keep myself as far away as I can from him and his ways and not flirt and deviate with sin. Because if I walk with the wicked, pretty soon I'm going to end up standing with the wicked, and then I'm going to end up sitting with the wicked. It's a slow fade, as the song goes, a slow progression. Verse 16, speaking of the ways of the wicked who walk in devious ways, for they cannot sleep unless they have done wrong, and they are robbed of sleep unless they have made someone stumble. Now that's an interesting verse, because normally what keeps someone up at night is if they have done something wrong, because it's your conscience that's eating at you. But in this case, it's someone whose whole life is wrapped around putting themselves first and doing that which they want to first, that if they haven't had their way, if they haven't done that which they are focused on in darkness, it's going to keep them up at night. It's going to rob them of sleep. And verse 17 says that they have, so to speak, accepted the invitation of woman folly that we'll read about in chapter 9. They eat the bread of wickedness and drink the wine of violence. But the path of the righteous is like the light of dawn, which shines brighter and brighter until full day. And the way of the wicked is like deep darkness. They do not know over what they stumble. All right, let's talk about verse 18 for a minute. We're going to use puns to teach here, because I love puns. All right, the closer you walk to the light, the closer you get to the sun. S-O-N-S-U-N. Oh, everyone laughed. That's bad. So, anyway, Jack didn't like it either. So, think about this for a minute, though. I want you to think about a sunset. Has anyone ever seen a sunset that kept fluctuating? And the sun went up a little bit, and then it went back down, and it got a little darker. And then it went up a little bit, and then it got a little darker. All right, when you think about a sunrise, the more time that elapses, the more the sun rises and the brighter everything gets around you. This is what the picture of wisdom is. Is at first you come into contact with the fear of the Lord and wisdom, and it starts to illuminate your path and you start to see things a little more clearly. But as you mature and as time goes on and as you get more wisdom and know the Lord more, it's like all of a sudden light just starts to expand around your life. And pretty soon what was still in darkness is now completely exposed by light, to the point where the sun is just right up in the dead center of the sky and there's no darkness anywhere. That's what Solomon equates this to. He says the path of the righteous is like that. It's like this light that just continues to get brighter and brighter the more you walk down this path. Yeah, Brad.
Mm-hmm.
Shows the path.
That's right. That's right. And that's why David writes in the Psalms, "Thy word is what? A lamp to my feet and a light to my path." This is what else light does. It exposes the path before you and behind you. And how many times, as you come to know God more, where we look back at our past and we tried to do things our way, but as you come to know God better and know His word and know His wisdom, you look back and you see all the places that you stumbled that you wouldn't have stumbled had it have been illuminated previously, had you had known, had you had just listened to wisdom in the first place. And it shows us why we've stumbled in the past, and it illuminates the path before us to keep us from stumbling again. And that's the nature of light. And it's only when we choose to put the light out of our life that we're going to stumble, that we're going to go ahead and continue in the path of darkness, because the two can't be present at the same time. You can't walk in the light and walk in darkness at the same time. You're either going to walk in the light or you're going to walk in darkness. That's just it. Third section. Oh, I got 2 minutes. If I finish part of it in the invitation, do I still win? He says yes. All right. So, verse 20. "My son, be attentive to my words, incline your ear to my sayings. Let them not escape from your sight. Keep them within your heart, for they are life to those who find them, and healing to all their flesh. Keep your heart with all vigilance, for from it flow the springs of life." Who says, guard your heart? Is that anyone else? Is the NASB or the King James? Verse 23. Does that say, guard your heart, Rochelle? Okay. I want us to think about this for a moment. How many times do we read in the Old Testament about the Lord saying, "I will put my law," where? Not on stone, but in your heart. And there's a difference between, you know, listening to wisdom and really owning wisdom, letting it permeate your heart and live within your heart, being written on your heart. And when we talk about guarding your heart or keeping your heart, let's just go back to a couple of principles. Jesus talks about this in Matthew chapter 15 when he says, "It's not that which goes into a man that defiles him, but it's that which comes out of a man." And he says, out of the heart, and then Jesus starts to list all of these things that take place. Our actions begin with that which we allow into our heart. And again, light and darkness can't coincide. If there's evil coming out of my actions, that means that what is filled within my heart is not light, but it is darkness. If you want to guard your heart, you have got to be so careful about what you allow in it. And if you really want to guard your heart and keep your heart, for from it flow the springs of life, you have got to make sure that it is wisdom that is written on your heart, that it is the law of the Lord, the fear of the Lord that is really written on your heart. Because we live in a world today that says, follow your heart, right? Follow your desires. And Jeremiah says, there's a way that seems right to a man, to the heart of man, but its way ends in destruction. And the proverb writer would say basically the same thing in Proverbs 14 and Proverbs 16. And in that, has anyone ever done the Love Dare or seen that book, The Love Dare, from the movie Fireproof? In the back, there's a great section talking about the difference between listening to your heart and leading your heart. And I should have printed that off. I'll print it off next time for you guys to have. But we have got to allow God and His Spirit and His Word to lead our hearts. When you submit to that and allow it to live within your heart, then your actions are going to result in walking in the light. But when we allow our heart to determine what we do, we just listen to our heart, our own desires, that's when we are not guarding our hearts with all vigilance. And the next section is going to really talk about that. We're out of time. Brad's got his hand up. Go ahead.
Well, it wasn't the out of time.
Okay.
End of John 9, it's after Jesus healed the blind man by putting the blood on his eyes, sends him off, and there's the big to-do about healing on the Sabbath. And Jesus is talking about blindness versus walking, and some Pharisees standing nearby, and he's at the end of this,
That's right.
Jesus, who is the light, I am the way, the truth, and the life.
That's right.
Then, if we admit we're blind, instead of trying to lead ourselves, and we admit we're blind and we need him to heal our sight to be able to see, then
that's right.
We'll go down right
back. And that's a perfect lead into what we'll talk about in 2 minutes. Mick's got something, then we're done.
Jeremiah 10:23 says that God never intended for man to